That's the story of Hanukkah. We taught it last week. I told it again just now. In keeping with the season, I'd like to talk about the importance of this holiday season. First, I talked about Hanukkah. Now I'd like to talk today and possibly next week about the birth of our Messiah. Now, as soon as I say that in a Messianic congregation, I get all kinds of reactions. As soon as you start talking about the birth of Messiah, I like to talk at this time of the year about Messiah. People say to me, well, you can't talk about the birth of Messiah. It's not Jewish. I said, listen carefully to what you said. What in all the world would be more Jewish than speaking about the birth of the Jewish Messiah coming to earth? That is Jewish. My sister years ago used to say to me, she goes, you know, we don't celebrate that holiday. And then she became a believer, and after she became a believer, she said to me, she says, why shouldn't we? Of all people, we should talk about the birth of our Messiah. So we've concluded it's very Jewish. Anyway, to talk about the birth of Messiah. Maybe it's the way you say it, but the other people said, but yeah, why do you do it now? He wasn't born now. He certainly wasn't born on December 25th. Well, you're probably right. Most scholars do not believe that Yeshua was born on December 25th. Some would say possibly in the fall, around the Jewish holiday of Sukkot. Others would say in the spring. The idea is that nobody really has any idea. They have clues, and they try to guess when he was born, but he didn't celebrate his birthday. But we want to talk about Messiah coming to earth. Of all the things that we should talk about, that we should pursue or seek, is to find out or speak about the Messiah, or speak about God. We should pursue that. We should pursue a relationship with God. In this life, people pursue everything imaginable. Anything you can imagine, people pursue. For various reasons. Some good, some not so good. But we pursue all kinds of things, but I think the most important thing in life to pursue would be a relationship with God. Certainly a relationship with the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Certainly we need to pursue the whole concept of Messiah. Now when you talk about that with people, with Jewish people, me and many other Jewish people, when people first came to me and told me about God, I said, that's the last thing in the world I want to talk about. I want to talk about everything else in the world. Sports, politics, girls, current events, whatever you need, I wanted to talk about it, but don't talk about God. Certainly, don't talk about Messiah. We don't do that. And yet, with our Jewish people, believe it or not, it's a very Jewish concept. It's very, very important throughout the ages. I mean, when we see the movie Fiddler on the Roof, by the way, that's probably the movie we're going to see at Family Night in January, so you should all come. Yeah, as a congregation, we should all see Fiddler on the Roof. But at the end of the movie, Tevye says, when they're being kicked out of the land again, he says, wouldn't this be a good time for the Messiah to return? It's the hope of the ages. It's the hope of our people, the Messiah. Why not talk about it at this time of the year? Not only that, but one of the greatest Jewish philosophers that ever lived, by the name of Maimonides. Maimonides set forth what we call the 13 principles of faith for Jewish people. And he says, these are the 13 principles that we must hold to for Jewish people. And one of those principles, he says, I believe with perfect faith in the coming of the Messiah. Jewish people are supposed to believe in the coming of Messiah. I speak a lot of times in churches, and the churches people say to me, well, do the Jewish people believe in the Messiah? I say, as a whole, we really don't. Our people have given up the hope of Messiah. We should. It's in Maimonides' 13 principles, but we don't really. Many Jewish people say, well, maybe there'll be a messianic age someday. Maybe. But most Jewish people say, right now is the time of heaven and hell. There is no future, and there certainly is no more Messiah. But it is a very Jewish custom. Now, when about 20, 30 years ago, when I became a believer in Yeshua, we didn't talk too much about Messiah. But today, throughout all the world, wherever you go, there's organizations, Chosen People, there's that other organization, Jews for Jesus, and there's other ones that are always speaking about Messiah. Everywhere Jewish people go today, no matter where they go, they have to be faced with that question. I mean, someone sooner or later is going to walk up to them and say to them, they're going to say, do you believe in the Messiah? Who is the Messiah? And we would talk about Yeshua being the Messiah. I want you to open up your bulletins and take out your outline, because the question I want to deal with today, as people search for everything in life, it just came, as they search for everything in life, meaning, happiness, joy, we should be pursuing Messiah. If you're not a believer, you should be asking yourself the question, who is the Messiah? Should I know about him? Should I have a relationship with him? If you are a believer, you should be pursuing a better relationship with the Messiah. But the question we want to look at today is, what should we do with the Messiah? Or who is the Messiah? What I'd like you to do is turn to that Jewish book in the Newer Covenant, or the Birch Hadashah. Turn to the book of Matthew. Turn to the book of Matthew. A couple years ago, I started teaching on the book of Acts. And I remember someone in our congregation said to me, I'm not coming. I said, why? They said, well, I could go to Calvary and hear about that Goyish book, the Gentile book of Acts. And I said, well, no, trust me, it's a Jewish book. And you're going to find out all kinds of things about how Jewish it really is. The book of Matthew is written by another Jewish person. It's a very Jewish book, and I want us to look at it, because what I'd like us to do is turn with me to Matthew chapter 2. Matthew chapter 2. We want to talk a little bit about the birth of Messiah, viewed from this Jewish man by the name of Levi or Matthew. And I want us to look in your outlines. You could fill that in. But the first thing we should do is we should search for the Messiah. All of us. We should look for the Messiah. We should examine the scriptures to see who the Messiah is. We should investigate the claims of those, I was going to call them Michiganists, those Messianic Jews. We should investigate those claims that they are making. I certainly investigated those claims and was very much upset when I first heard, which I'll tell you a little bit more in a minute. We should inquire about the Messiah. In your outlines, write it here, the wise men of old, searched for the Messiah. We see chapter 2 of Matthew is a search for the Messiah. And I want us to follow along first. The wise men, they searched for the Messiah. Follow along now with me in chapter 2, starting in verse 1. Now, after Yeshua was born in Bethlehem, now just stop for a minute, because I want to try to set the context as we go through this whole book, this whole section. Matthew was a Jewish man who wrote to Jewish people. And what he was trying to do to show them, he was trying to show them the Messiah has come. Our Messiah has come. Other followers of Yeshua, put it this way, they said at one point, we have found the Messiah. I love those words. It's found in the New Covenant, in one of the Gospels, and it says, we have found the Messiah. What a great claim. Just think of that. Jewish people walking up to other Jewish people, or Gentiles saying, we have found the Messiah. Someone else put it this way, we have found him, of whom Moses and the law and the prophets have written about. We have found the one, the hope of the ages, the one who's supposed to redeem, save all mankind, bring hope to us, bring us back to God, give us a relationship with God. It's the Messiah who was supposed to do that. Matthew is writing to Jewish people and he's saying, we have found him. He has walked among us. He was born. And he proves it. Look how he begins the book in chapter 1. Matthew chapter 1. He sets the tone. I mean, the book really, if you really don't understand it, it oozes Jewishness. It's like walking through New York or something. It's just Jewish. Everywhere you go. And it says in verse 1, the book of the genealogy. I'm going to give you a description, a genealogy of the king, the coming king. Have to have the genealogy of the king. And he puts it this way, the book of the genealogy of Yeshua the Messiah, the son of David, the son of Abraham. That's Jewish. The son of David. What he's trying to tell us here, Matthew, is we have found him, the Messiah, the King of Israel, who would fulfill all the promises that God gave to David. We have found the one who will fulfill all the promises that God gave to our father, Abraham. This is his genealogy of the king. Then he goes on in chapter 1 to show how he fulfilled a unique prophecy, which we're going to get at in a minute. Now turn to chapter 2. Matthew is speaking to them, and he writes these words now in verse 1. Now after this Yeshua, who was the Messiah, after Yeshua was born in Bethlehem of Judea. Now again, see, when you come to a Messianic congregation, you see the scriptures a little differently. Because, let me just see hands. Who's been to Israel? Everyone raise your hand. Not recently, okay. No, anyway, but when you get to Bethlehem, people say, well, we're going to go to Bethlehem. Not too Jewish there. It's really not. You think of Bethlehem, you don't think very Jewish. You think of Arabs, you think of churches, you think of stained glass windows, you think of occupied territory. It doesn't sound very Jewish. That's the only thing. But when Matthew wrote it, it just flowed with Jewishness. That's all it was. When he wrote this to the people, it just rung such note in all their heads. And he says, now Yeshua was born in Bethlehem. What was so special about Bethlehem? When you said that to a Jewish person back then, they thought of our father, Jacob, burying his wife, Rachel, when she had Benjamin, when they're traveling through the land, and she died. And he buried her at Bethlehem. That's the beginning of our nation almost, of our people, Bethlehem. Then when they heard Bethlehem, they thought of Boaz and Ruth. They thought they met in Bethlehem. When they would realize this, these were the great-grandparents of King David. Bethlehem just rung such a note of Jewishness. It rang the note of Jewishness for King David. It's interesting also, go back to chapter 1, just an interesting verse. Verse 17. Therefore all the generations from Abraham to David are 14. The writer Matthew is purposely picking the word 14 here. And he says, and from David to the deportation of Babylon, 14. He likes 14 for some reason. And from the deportation of Babylon to the time of Messiah, 14. 14, 14, 14. 14 generations. Why 14? Well, Jewish, each Hebrew letter is a number. And King David's name, David, is 14. And what he's trying to say is the Messiah is coming from the line of David. And everywhere you hear, you just hear, first you hear Abraham, you hear David, Messiah. That's all he's trying to tell us. Messiah has come. He's from the line of David. And look what we read in verse 1. Now after Yeshua was born in Bethlehem of Judea, it says, in the days of Herod the king. Now, what he's going to do here, Matthew's going to do, is actually set up a couple contrasts throughout these first couple verses. He's going to show a contrast, actually two different contrasts. The first contrast that he's showing is, look who I'm presenting to you, Yeshua, the Messiah, the son of Abraham, the son of David, the coming king, the real king of Israel. But he tells us here, he says, these were in the days of Herod the king. And what Matthew was really saying was, Herod was an usurper. Herod wasn't the real, he was king at that time, but he shouldn't have been king. He was a wicked king. He got in the king by from Rome. Now there's a couple of things you might want to know about Herod. He was king over the land at that point. He was born somewhere around 70 years before the birth of Yeshua our Messiah. And he was made king over the land about 40 years before the birth of Messiah. Herod was what we call from the line of Esau. He was an Edomite. And what he did was he married a Maccabee. And he took over the kingdom there. Not only that, he was given the kingdom by Rome, who was in the power. They made him the king. He got rid of all opposition, which I'll tell you about in a minute, how he did that. He was an interesting character. He's extremely wealthy. Very, what they say, gifted in politics. He knew how to work the system. Actually, he was king through two different empires in Rome. What happens is, see, if you had one emperor and you were for him, and then he died and his opponent became emperor, you would be killed. But he knew how to work both sides. He won favor with everybody. He was a slick politician. He was loyal to Rome. He was a great administrator. He was extremely clever. He helped in Israel a lot with famine and the relief for famine. He was a great builder. He built the temple. He was a tremendous builder. Even his foes admired him. They were fearful of him, but everyone admired him. He loved power, but he oppressed the people tremendously. He taxed them heavily. They all resented him because he wasn't the proper king of Israel. Something else that you should know about Herod. He was ill. He was paranoid. He was crazy. And everyone was fearful of him. He was very, very cruel. He would go into fits of anger and rage. And he killed everyone. That was what he was known for. He killed everyone. Certainly he killed all his foes. He killed all his associates, anyone who was around him. Because he was paranoid and he was pretty sick, he thought that everyone was trying to get his empire and kill him. So instead, he killed them first. He even killed his favorite wife. He was afraid that she was possibly plotting, or he was jealous, actually, and he killed her as well. Actually, what he did when he left, he would lock her in a tower and put a guard to watch over her so no one would go near her. When he came back, he knew only the guard could have been near her, so he killed the guard, then he killed his wife also. He killed everybody. Not only that, he killed his two sons. He killed two of his sons, thinking they would take over his kingdom. The emperor of Rome even said, it's better to be Herod's pig than be Herod's dog. It was dangerous to be associated with him. On the day of his death, he was angry and cruel, and he killed hundreds and hundreds of people in the land. He died right a little bit after the birth of Yeshua. He died somewhere around 4 B.C. They tell us Yeshua was born somewhere around 4, 5, or 6 B.C. So in verse 1 now, we have a little scene here being set. In the Jewish town of Bethlehem, you have a usurper king by the name of Herod ruling over the land. And it says, behold, magi, wise men from the east, arrived in Jerusalem. Now the magi, the question is again now, who are they? I mean, we hear the songs, we three kings of Orient, whatever. And we have all kinds of thoughts on who the magi were. Now, tradition, some tradition tells us there was three of them. Now, the reason they have three is because of verse 11, where it says they brought gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh, although there's no telling how many there were, but most people say there were three. The rumor is that there were three kings that they actually can get from, actually, parts in the Old Covenant, where it speaks about the coming of Messiah, and it tells us kings from the east will come and bow down and worship before the coming Messiah. You find that in one of the Psalms, you find that in Isaiah as well. So the tradition is that three kings were coming to bow down before the Messiah. Matthew writes here that three wise men, or magi, came from the east. They were probably priests, not in Israel, but from the area of Babylon, or what they call Media. They were priests there. They interpreted dreams. They were from the area of Babylon. What they loved to do, these magi, was they would interpret dreams. They were very involved, interested in dreams, in astronomy, astrology, calculating the times. They're involved with magic books, mysteries for the future, thinking about the future. These men would come. Now look at me in verse 2. The magi came from the east, probably from the land of around Babylon. And it says, verse 2, where is he who has been born king of the Jews? Now the magi, it's interesting here because the other contrast, one contrast being set up is the real king of Israel, Yeshua, who's the promised king, as opposed to a false king by the name of Herod. The other contrast here that you're going to see is the magi, Gentiles from the east, some priests from Midian. These Gentiles come very, very interested in finding about the king of Israel, finding out all about the coming Messiah, finding out who the ruler, really, of the world that should be. They're very interested. And the contrast being set up here is that these people who really shouldn't be interested are very interested, and the people who should be interested could care less. That's the Jewish people, the Jewish leaders. They knew about it, which we're going to see in a minute. They really didn't seem to care. But these people really do care. And it says in verse 2, their interest is, they say, where is he who has been born king of the Jews? For we have seen his star in the east, and we have come to worship him. Now, why was there such an interest? Why were they interested here? Well, hundreds of years before, actually, in Babylon, we know from the story, Daniel and the Jewish people were taken captive, and they moved to the land of Babylon. And in Babylon, they were there for 70 years. At the end of those 70 years, and this was like 400 years before, when they were there for 70 years, then a new power came in, and they were brought back to the land of Israel, the Jewish people, somewhere around 540 BCE. But most people didn't realize that many, many Jewish people stayed in Babylon. They built a Jewish community in Babylon. When we talk of the Center for Jewish People today, you think of Jerusalem? No. You think of New York. That's where the Jewish people are. In this, well, in the winter. In the winter. They leave and go down for the winter. I have no idea what I was saying now. Okay, yeah. Babylon. So, Jewish people were in Babylon. They built up a whole big Jewish community there. In fact, such a Jewish community. In fact, over the next hundreds of years, when Jewish people in Jerusalem wanted to advance and educate and develop and become leaders, where did they go for their education? To Babylon. That's where they went. That was the center for Jewish learning. Not only that, aren't the Jewish writings, what we know is the Talmud, which has all the authoritative Jewish writings, that was written in Babylon, the Babylonian Talmud. So this was a major center. And people who were interested, Daniel also wrote about the coming of Messiah. So this whole Jewish community influenced Babylon, the land of Media. And their priests who were interested in astrology and calculating times, they got interested in finding out about the coming king that the Jewish community wrote about. Now it's hundreds of years later, and we see in verse 2, it says, whereas he was been born king of the Jews. The priests from Midian had come, and they wanted to know about who was born king of the Jews. But they said, now something's interesting here in verse 2, for we have seen his star in the east, and we have come to worship him. Now it's interesting here, because there's all kinds of theories and thoughts on the star also, by the way. These priests in Babylon are there one day, and they look up, and they say, we saw his star in the east, and we've come to worship him. Now, why would they be interested in such a star? Well, actually, first of all, people say, what does the star look like? Now, there's a couple theories, not important, but I'll tell you them real quick. One of the theories is that it was called a conjunction between Jupiter and Saturn. Two stars came together, or two planets there, and a great light. That's just a theory. Everyone's trying to make theories. Another theory on the star was that it was called a supernova. Anyone have any idea what a supernova is? I didn't. Anyway, a supernova is a great explosion. And these guys, but you know, it's a little hard. These guys are in these explosion. They see a bright light, and the light's going to take them away from Babylon to Israel. It guided them. It led them. Makes no sense. There's other theories. Halley's Comet. Yeah, that's in there too. When you're researching it, you'll find. Some people, it was Halley's Comet. Although they tell us, I wasn't there, but Halley's Comet passed around 12 BC, so it was too early. But there are theories on that as well. Matthew is trying to present something else to us. It wasn't any of those things. It was something supernatural. Could it possibly have been an angel? It was some kind of unique star. But it got their attention. Why did it get their attention? Well, possibly, and we don't have really time to trace all this through, but they could have been taught by the Jewish community. They would certainly be familiar with certain things. What I'd like you to do, if you will, keep your hand in Matthew, but I want you to turn with me back to the Torah, to the book of Numbers. Numbers, I would like you to turn with me to the book of Numbers, chapter 22. A very interesting section. Now, if these priests from the east were interested in the coming of the Jewish Messiah, I don't know how much they knew. Possibly, you could take them all the way back to Genesis 3:15, where it said, the seed of the woman, in one of the first proclamations in the Bible about the Messiah, it said in very strange, veiled reference, it said that after Adam and Eve had sinned, and then God pronounces something that's going to take place. It says, the seed of the woman will come forth and crush the serpent's head. Now, most Bible scholars, conservative Bible scholars, take that to be the seed of the woman was a prophecy speaking about the coming of the Messiah. The seed of the woman would eventually come right after a man had fallen into sin. God promised a Redeemer, someone who would lift man up and save us. And it says in Genesis 3 that the seed of the woman would crush the serpent, and the serpent would bruise the Messiah's heel. He would suffer in his death, but that he would crush Satan. But then if you trace that seed throughout the scriptures, maybe they're aware of it, maybe not. But the next mention of that, we actually see, is through Abraham. See, what God is trying to do is trying to produce the Messiah, and he's trying to take us through the scriptures to show us. The first mention's in Genesis 3. But then we might see that God is going to focus through the nation of Israel. That's why the Jewish people were chosen. You ask Jewish people today, why were you chosen? They'll say to suffer. But that really isn't the reason. We were chosen to bring forth the Messiah. And God said to Abraham, it's through you, and in you, I'm going to bless the world. Through Abraham, his people, and ultimately, one. Through the leader, the representative of the nation of Israel. And God says it's going to be through you and your seed. Could be his descendants, his children, but specifically the Messiah. And we see that in Genesis chapter 12. We see it in Genesis chapter 22. God's promise to Abraham, it's through you, Abraham. Your people, and specifically one of your people, will come. Then God limits it even a little bit further and tells us a little bit more about it, because in the book of Genesis chapter 49, he tells us the seed, as God is developing it, the seed, where the seed was going to come from. Not just from all the Jewish people, which one, but it tells us from one of the tribes of Jacob. Which one? It says the tribe of Judah. And it says Judah would bring forth the Messiah. And it's interesting in that passage because it compares and it says speaks about the Messiah there in Genesis chapter 49. And I want you to listen carefully to this, because when it speaks about the ruler, it speaks about him being a lion, like a lion. Actually, when you see the Segal's paintings over there, when you see Judah represented, he's always represented as a lion. The king of Israel would be a lion. He would couch, he would rule and conquer his enemies. That's the way he's described. And the reason I'm saying that is because I want us to see something in a minute. He would be a lion, and he would come forth from the tribe of Judah. Now with that, if you trace throughout the scriptures, you see that God is trying to identify who the Messiah would be. But what's that have to do with these priests coming from Midian? They saw his star. Possibly they knew all that, but possibly not. But we see in Numbers chapter 22, one of their own, a prophet who came from their area, actually prophesied about the Messiah. It's a very interesting, actually look up here for a minute, because you have to read the whole section. It's actually Numbers 22 through 24. But in Numbers chapter 22, let me tell you what took place here. The Jewish people were about to go into the land. Moses was about to die. Jewish people, Joshua was going to take them into the land of Israel. And they're outside on the other side, in Moab. And when they're on the other side of the land, they're about to go in, the king of Moab says, these Jewish people are too many. I need to curse them and kill them. This is before they were going into the land of Israel, the time of the Exodus, right? Or right after the Exodus, before they went into Israel. So what he does, this king of Moab, he sends over here to the area of Babylon, and he gets a prophet, who's known prophet, who blesses people with blessings and curses people with curses. And the one he blesses are blessed, and the ones he curses are cursed. So this king says, hey, this king's name was Balak, and he says, Balaam, could you come here? And they send for Balaam, and Balaam comes to Balak. And Balak says to Balaam the prophet, listen, I don't like these people. There's too many of them. I'm afraid of them. He said, I want you, I've called you here, I'm going to give you money, riches, houses, whatever you want. I want you to curse these people. So Balaam comes there to curse the Jewish people. And look what he says. Chapter 23. The first curse, as he opens his mouth to curse the Jewish people, and we read his words in verse 7. From Aram, Balak has brought me. He came from... Balak brought him. It says, Moab's king from the mountains of the east. Come curse Jacob for me. That's just what I told you. Curse these people. Come denounce Israel. And then Balaam says, how can I curse whom God has not cursed? How can I denounce whom God has not denounced? As I see him from the tops of the rocks, I look at him from the hills. Behold, a people that are set apart, and they shall not be reckoned among the nations. Who can count the dust of Jacob? Or number the fourth part of Israel. Let me die with the upright. And let my end be like theirs. Well, all of a sudden, Balaam, instead of cursing them, he's blessing them. Balaam says, stop! What are you doing? Says he claps his hands, stop, stop! I brought you to curse these people, and now you're blessing them. And Balaam says, I can't help it. I open my mouth, blessings come out. God speaking blessing. I don't know who these people are, but whatever, I have to speak blessing. So Balak says, listen, you saw the wrong part of them. Let me take you to another side and just show you this part of them. Maybe you'll curse them now. So Balaam says, okay, let's try it. So he tries in the next curse. And that's found in chapter 23. He's going to curse them this time for sure. You see, Balaam wanted money. Balaam wanted position. So he comes there, he wants to curse these people. Verse 18, he takes up his discourse again. And this is what he says. Arise, O Balak, and hear. Give ear to me, you son of Zippor. Now here comes the curse. God is not a man that he should lie, nor is he a son of man that he should repent. Has he said, will he not do it? Or has he spoken, will he not make it good? Behold, I have received the command to bless. When he is blessed, then I cannot revoke it. He has not observed misfortune in Jacob, nor has he seen trouble in Israel. The Lord his God is with him, and the shout of the king is among them. Look at verse 22, very important, because we're going to come back to it. God brings them, the Jewish people, out of Egypt, He is for them like the horns of a wild ox. For there is no omen against Jacob, nor is there any divination against Israel. Balak was real upset. It says, then Balak said to Balaam, stop! He's upset. He says, do not curse him at all and don't bless him. Don't do anything. I want you to curse him and now you're blessing them. Doesn't know what to do at this point. Then he goes on and he gives a third oracle, and he says, and I want you to follow now, and it starts to change it a little bit, the oracle. In verse 3 of chapter 24. Here comes Balaam again, the son of Beor. The oracle, he says, of the man whose eyes opened, he's speaking of himself, his eyes been opened. The oracle of him who hears the words of God. I see the vision of the Almighty falling down, yet I have my eyes uncovered. God has revealed things to me. And then he speaks about Israel. How fair are your tents, O Jacob, your dwelling places, your dwellings, O Israel. Like the valleys that stretch out, like the gardens beside the river, like aloes planted by the Lord, like cedars beside the waters. What he's trying to say is Israel is so blessed. God has not seen misfortune for the Jewish people. You might want me to curse them, but I can't curse them. God has prospered and blessed these people. But look what he says now. Verse 7. Water. Again, that's a symbol of prosperity and blessings. Water shall flow from his buckets. What it's really saying is blessings and prosperity are going to flow out from Israel. But then he goes on further to say, and his, Israel's, here it comes, seed. Israel's seed now shall be by many waters, and his king. Now there's a little switch going on in this prophecy here. I want you to just look up here for a minute. What he's doing is saying that God is going to bless all these Jewish people, this nation of Israel. But then he's saying, of all these people, he's saying there's one, the representative of the whole nation, will fulfill all the blessings. His king. Balaam is saying to Balak, you're a king, you came for me to curse them. But the king of this people will come and destroy you and rule the world. That's his prophecy here. And he's saying here in verse 7, his king shall be higher than your king. That's my paraphrase, Agag. And his kingdom shall be exalted. He's now speaking not just of the Jewish people, but the representative of the Jewish people, the Messiah. Now look, and I want you to compare two verses here. Chapter 24, verse 8. God brings him out of Egypt. Did anyone pick that up? Look in chapter 23, verse 22. God brings them out of Egypt. What's the difference? One word. God brings them, the Jewish people, out of Egypt. He did. Chapter 24, verse 8, God brings him, the Messiah, out of Egypt. Messiah went down to Egypt. God would bring him back. And it says, speaking of the Messiah now, God is for him like the horns of a wild ox. See, God was for Israel, but God ultimately is for the representative of Israel, the Messiah. God is for him like the horns of a wild ox. He shall devour the nations who are his adversaries, and he shall crush their bones in pieces. He shall shatter them with his arrows. Now look in verse 9. He couches, he lies down, the Messiah lies down as a lion. Now, if you're confused, let me just summarize it like this. Genesis 3 said God, through the woman's seed, that would come through Abraham, the seed of Abraham. That would come through the line of Judah, would be the Messiah, the king of Israel. Now we see here the Messiah again. It says, he couches, he lies down as a lion, and as a lion, who will dare rouse him? Blessed is everyone who blesses you, and cursed is everyone who curses you. If we were talking about Israel before, now we're talking about the one who would lead Israel. And look at the final thing in this prophecy that I want you to see. In verse 15, chapter 24 of Numbers, he took up his last discourse, the oracle of Balaam, and he says, verse 16, the oracle of him who hears the words of God and he knows the knowledge of the Most High, who sees the vision of the Almighty, falling down, yet I have my eyes uncovered. Follow carefully in this verse. Remember, he came from the land of Midian. I should say Media and Babylon. I see him, but not now. This is the coming king. I behold him, but not near. Look carefully at the passage. A star shall come forth from Jacob. This was a prophecy well known by the people in Daniel's time. Well known in that part of the world. A star would come forth from Jacob. People in the East would say a star is going to come forth to pronounce, to proclaim the coming of the king. And they were interested in the future time. They were looking for a star, some sign. Verse 17, a star would come forth from the Jewish people, from Jacob. And a scepter, the ruling rod, will rise from Israel. And they will crush through the forehead, and I should say, of all their enemies. They will tear down all the sons of Sheth. Verse 19, one from Jacob shall have dominion and shall destroy the remnant from the city. Now go back to Matthew 2. Matthew chapter 2. The search for them was when they saw the star in the east. Verse 2. They came and they said, where is he who was born King of the Jews? For we have seen his star. The Gentiles knew about it. The Gentiles wanted it. The Jewish people had no concern. Sounds like today. Jewish people. I talk to my people about Messiah. Okay, I don't need to hear about it. Not so interested. People come to me all the time. Say, I talk to my family about God and about the Messiah. They go, no big deal. We want to talk about other things. Here it says, we have seen a star in the east and we have come to worship him. The men of old, the wise men of old searched for the Messiah. Verse 3 and 4 tells us that even King Herod was searching for the Messiah. Look what it says, verse 3. And when the king heard about it, he was troubled. Why was King Herod troubled? Well, he was afraid. They'd make this child born king of the Jews, and they would destroy him. He was troubled, but I like what it says in verse 3, the way Matthew puts it. All of Jerusalem was troubled also. Why were they troubled? Because when Herod was troubled, you were troubled. You didn't want to mess with Herod. And it says that everyone was troubled. So Herod goes searching. He gathers together the Jewish leaders in Jerusalem, and he gathers them together, and it says all the chief priests and the scribes and the people, and he began to inquire of them where the Messiah was to be born. Herod gets them all together and says, tell me, I hear the rumor. The king of the Jews was born. These strange men from the east come looking for his star. Tell me, where is he going to be born, who's born king of the Jews? Herod wants to know. Now we know later why Herod wanted to know. Herod wanted to go and kill him. There have been many people searching for the Messiah to prove Yeshua is wrong. I mean, I did that in the early days when I first heard about Yeshua. I said, I'm going to prove those people wrong. Who do they think they are? There's a man, it's a well-known book by a man, a lawyer by the name of Frank Morrison. He wrote the book, Who Moved the Stone? This lawyer set out to prove. He went all kinds of research. He studied and studied. He was going to prove that Yeshua couldn't be the Messiah. There's plenty of people that have been raised up to prove that Yeshua is not the Messiah. When they truly investigate it and look into it with an open heart, they come to one conclusion. Yeshua is the Messiah. King Herod wasn't looking for that. He was looking to find him so he could kill him. Verse 3 and 4, Herod looked to destroy and kill the Messiah. But in verses 5 and following, and in your outlines you can fill it in, the Jewish leaders should have been searching for the Messiah. They know better. Look with me in verse 5. And they said to him, when he gathered these Jewish leaders, where is the Messiah going to be born? The Jewish people said, sort of as a matter of fact, they went like this. In Bethlehem. They said, in Bethlehem of Judea, for so it's been written by the prophet. And I picture almost the scene as Herod saying to the Jewish people, where is the Messiah born? They go, yeah, Bethlehem. They're not really interested. But they should have been. They should have been, just like the Magi, look for the star. These Jewish leaders, they should have been looking for the coming of Messiah. Because they were familiar with this. Now, if you have it, I want you to jot it down, or you can follow along. I want you to go back with me just a couple chapters into the Old Covenant. I want you to turn with me to the book of Micah, because this is what they quote. This was written 700 years before Yeshua was born. Now I want you to turn with me while I have you in Micah chapter 5. Micah chapter 5. These are the verses that are quoted by the Jewish leaders to Herod hundreds of years later. Now when I bring up Matthew chapter 5 to Jewish people today, they have the same thought that I had. The Bible. Who knows about the Bible? I'm not really interested in it. But they should be. This is their scripture. I told Mark, the one who taught me about Messiah, I told him that there's no way I could understand the scriptures. I wasn't interested in the scriptures. He constantly shared the scriptures with me. He turned with me to the book of Matthew, I'm sorry, book of Micah chapter 5. Micah chapter 5. He wanted to speak about the Messiah. I wasn't interested at that point. But I want us to look, Micah 5, verse 1. Now muster yourselves in troops, daughter of troops. They have laid siege against us. With a rod they will smite the judge of Israel on the cheek. Verse 2. But as for you, Bethlehem, Ephratah, that's Bethlehem in Judea, it says you're too little to be among the clans of Judah. Now I want you to realize, this was written 700 years before Yeshua was born, by the prophet Micah. Jewish leaders all took this to be a prophesied prediction about the coming of the Messiah. Look what it says about it. But as for you, Bethlehem Ephrathah, you're too little to be among the mighty clans of Judah. You're small. You're insignificant. There's bigger and more important cities in Judah. Bethlehem, you're small. Yet, from you, one will go forth for me to be the ruler in Israel. Micah told us that the Messiah, the ruler in Israel, was going to be born in Bethlehem. The Jewish leaders knew it. The Messiah would be born in Bethlehem because they were familiar with this. They quoted this to Herod 500, 700 years later. Micah told us this. But look what else he says. Very strange thing about this one who would be born in Bethlehem. He says he's going to be the ruler. He's going to go forth for God. He's going to be the ruler in Israel. But then it tells us, even though he's born in Bethlehem, it says his goings forth. What that really means, his origin. Where did he really come from? Even though he'd be born in Bethlehem, where did he really come from? And it says, his origins are from long ago, from the days of Olam, from the days of eternity. This one who'd be born in Bethlehem always existed. He is the coming Messiah. He always lived. He had no beginning and no end. Micah chapter 5 verse 2 tells our Jewish people today, Messiah would be born in Bethlehem, but he always existed. The Jewish leaders should have known this. They should have also known two other passages. I want you to turn to, because a contemporary of Micah was Isaiah. I want you to turn with me to Isaiah chapter 7. Isaiah chapter 7. Jewish people should have been familiar with this. When I first saw this in my Bible, I couldn't believe it was in my Bible. I thought it was a misprint. It was written 700 years, same time as Micah was writing. Isaiah was writing similar, a different place. And Isaiah writes these words in Isaiah chapter 7, verse 10. And the Lord spoke again to Ahaz, saying, ask for a sign from the Lord your God. Make it as deep as Sheol or as high as heaven. You know what Isaiah is saying to Ahaz? Ask for a miracle from God. Doesn't matter how hard you want to make it. High as heaven, as deep as Sheol, doesn't matter. Ask for a miracle from God, a sign that I'm going to deliver you from your enemies. But Ahaz says, I will not ask, I won't test God. The English really doesn't capture it. Ahaz was a wicked, godless king, and he wanted nothing to do with God. Verse 13 says, then he said, listen now, O house of David, is it too slight a thing for you to try the patience of men, that you will try the patience of my God as well? Therefore the Lord himself will give you a sign, sort of a miracle. Behold, and there it says, the virgin will be with a child, and will bear a son. Now that's what I said. Nonsense. That is not possible. Well, it's not possible if you don't believe in God. That's for sure. And it is not possible. Let me assure you. It is not possible. God was going to do a miracle for the nation of Israel. And he was going to do a great sign. The one, the coming king, the star, would be born in Bethlehem. The one who would be coming would be a sign to Israel that the virgin would bring forth a child. Now that, listen carefully, that can't be done. And when you talk with people, they will think of you as backward and ignorant. It can't be done. A virgin can't bring forth a child. Now I remember before I got married, the shamus from the synagogue was setting up the huppah. And as he was setting up the huppah, I remember, he was a sweet man, very sharp, he was about 80 years old. And he sat down next to me after he finished the huppah, and he looked at me and he says, do you really believe that virgin stuff? I remember him asking me that. And I looked at him and I said, well, you answer me a question. See, that's Jewish. They ask you a question, you ask one back. I asked him the question back. I said, listen, you answer me this question. do you really believe in Isaac? And he got all excited. He went, yeah, of course I believe in Isaac. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, I believe in the patriarchs. And I looked at him and I said, come on. The Bible says Abraham was 100 and Sarah was 90. They couldn't have a child. And he looked at me and he went just like this. He went, a miracle. A miracle. God did a miracle. I said, I believe the same thing. God did a miracle, bringing forth the Messiah, the star that our people should be searching out. Look with me in Isaiah 9, two chapters later. They should be familiar with this, our people. They are today because they sing about it in the next couple weeks. It's all they hear on radio everywhere. Verse 6 and 7, but no one knows where it came from. The Jewish prophet Isaiah writes it. Verse 6, for a child will be born to the Jewish people. A son will be given to our people. And the government will rest on his shoulders. And his name will be called Wonderful Counselor, the Mighty God, the child that's born in Bethlehem, the star, the king, the Messiah, the one born of an Alma, a virgin. He would be called Wonderful Counselor, the Mighty God, the Father of Eternity, the Prince of Peace. And there will be no end to the increase of his government. He will someday come and set up his kingdom. There will be no end to the increase of his government or of his peace. And on whose throne will he reign? David's throne, and over his kingdom. He will establish it and uphold it with justice and righteousness from then on and forevermore, because the Lord of hosts will accomplish this. Go back to Matthew chapter 2. The Jewish people should have searched for the Messiah. Today, our people should be searching for the Messiah. The search for many of our people continues. You know, I brought this book up here because for me, my search began back in the late 60s, early 70s, when a Jewish couple by the name of Finkelstein moved into my neighborhood. And they started telling me about the Messiah. That began my search. I didn't like what they had to say. I didn't like them. I didn't like the people that went to their house. My search began to prove that these were not real Jews at all, that they were no longer Jews, and I fought against them. My search began. This book has been used more than any book in history to reach Jewish people, probably. The book is called Betrayed. It's a story about a Jewish man. Jewish man, his daughter Judy comes home, actually, and tells the dad, Stan, that she believed in Yeshua. She said Jesus. He says, how do you feel when you're a successful businessman? Very successful. 50 years old. You're Jewish. You're well known in the Jewish community. Your 21-year-old daughter tells you she believes in Jesus. He says he felt betrayed. His wife felt betrayed. He had another daughter. She felt betrayed. The whole family was fuming with Judy. Their search began, an intense search. And he says in the book, he said he went to prove them wrong, and he was going to. And the book is fascinating to see this man's search. Jewish people have had search all the time. We should be searching for the Messiah. I have a friend in New Jersey, a Lubavitch. This young man, actually he was a Lubavitch, he was a special Torah reader in the synagogue for 15 years. He read the Torah every week in the synagogue. Somebody came to him and challenged him and said to him that Yeshua was the Messiah. He went to prove that person wrong, a Lubavitch. And now he's a messianic leader in New Jersey, preaching just like I am today. Our search, our Jewish people should be searching. But the question is, when we find the Messiah, what will we do? And your outlines fill it in. We should worship the Messiah. Fill it in quickly here. A, the wise men found their Messiah. Look with me in verse 9. The wise men found the Messiah. All the evidence points to him. It's interesting because in the movie Ben-Hur, actually one of the Magi. It's supposed to be Balthazar, because they were in the history, they were also given names. But this one came to Ben-Hur, Judah Ben-Hur, and he says to him, "My son, there are many paths to God. I hope yours will not be too difficult." For many of our Jewish people, we're searching. We have to say to ourselves, what should we do with the Messiah? Can Yeshua really be the Messiah? All the evidence points to him. Let me tell you this. When I saw all the evidence pointing to Yeshua, I did not like it. I said, how could I ever think to believe such a thing? I couldn't believe this. If I accepted this, this makes me a Gentile. God made me a Jew, and I don't want to become a Gentile. Nothing's wrong with being a Gentile. God made Jews and Gentiles. The important thing is that we follow Messiah. But a Jewish person is tremendously fearful of giving up who they are, who God made them to be. I didn't like all the evidence pointing. Look what happens in verse 9 here. It says, "And having heard the king, they went their way," they left the king. "And lo, the star appeared again, which they had seen in the east, went on before them, until it came and stood over where the child was." The wise men found the Messiah. My search went all over. My good friend Mark came to me one day and he told me he believed in the Messiah. And I slammed the door in his face and kicked him out of my house and told him never to come back. So he came back the next day. And my search started as I started looking into the scriptures. And I would ask the typical Jewish things. What about the Holocaust? What about 6 million? What about, quote, Christians who killed and murdered my people? And he would say to me, what's the Bible say? I said, I don't want to know the Bible. I don't want to know the facts. I just know history. He said, what's the Bible say? And my search led me further and further into the scriptures. And I kept asking myself, and it says here, the star led them. And I believe in all that time, God was leading me, guiding me, directing me. In this book, it's interesting because toward the end of the book, this man finally comes to the conclusion that Yeshua is the Messiah. It was so difficult for him. And he finally made the prayer. He received the Messiah. And he says, now what? What about my wife? She's going to kill me. What about my other daughter? And she was violently opposed to all this. What do I do? And he says this, "It was late morning when I thought about Ethel. I must tell her of my decision. Suddenly guilt gripped through me. I rushed for the phone. Then I paused." He was at a different place. He had gone somewhere, and he was calling his wife. "Then I paused with trepidation and began to plan a scenario of exactly how I would tell her what had happened." We've all thought that. What am I going to tell my parents? How am I going to do it? And we get there, and we're stuck. We don't know what to say. The more I tried to plan it, the worse I felt. How would Ethel take it? Would she feel betrayed by me, as she had with Judy, the first daughter who accepted Yeshua? And Anne, what's she going to think? My daughter, she's going to kill me too. Would her anger now be directed at me? Would this split our family in two? It does all the time. Cold dread was sweeping over me. When Ethel answered the phone, I couldn't remember the scenario. All I could do was blurt out, "Eh? It's me. It's over. I've made my decision. Jesus is the Messiah." There was a momentary pause as I held my breath. Then Ethel's voice came back softly over the phone. "Thank God. That makes it unanimous. We've all been waiting for you." The whole family prayed to receive the Messiah. It's quite a story. God leads Jewish people in many different ways. He leads us to believe in Messiah. The star that led them thousands of years ago is leading Jewish people today. Look at me in verse 10. "When they saw the star, they rejoiced with great joy." Be in your outlines if you want to fill it in. "They rejoiced and they gave thanks. When they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy." I know on that January 15th, 1972, in a house that they nicknamed the Hidden Matzah. I saw a movie that night, and that night I told God I believed I was a sinner. I believe Yeshua, the Messiah, died for me. And I want Him as my atonement. And I received Him into my life that night. And I remember that night, I left those people because I was still a little fearful. I went home and I knew I was one of them. My life was drastically changed forever. I knew that my sins were forgiven. I was able to thank and praise God. I felt free. I've prayed with many, many Jewish people since, cry immediately, feel like they've been set free. All of a sudden they realize it's true. It's amazing. You pray with some Jewish people, after they fought for years and years and years, they pray to receive the Lord, they accept the Messiah, and they look at me and go, it's true. It really is true. I said, but what about our people? They think I'm blind. A couple months, 2 months ago, Jewish woman, I told you about her. I prayed with her. I met her in Starbucks for 3 hours. We talked all about these prophecies. And after 3 hours, she goes, this is really interesting. I thought she'd accept the Lord. She goes, no. I'm not ready yet. She said, but I'll come out Saturday. And the next week she came out. And she came out here to service, and she loved it. And afterwards, I'm talking about the Messiah, and I said to myself, she's going to accept the Lord. Today, I know it. She knows. I know God, the star's leading her. I'd stare there for sure. And afterwards, I looked at her, I said, ready? She goes, no. No, I'm not ready yet. And I said to her, but listen, when you do it, you better do it with me. I want to pray with you to receive Messiah into your life. She goes, sure, of course, don't worry. So the next week she came back again. This week I felt more strong than ever. And I'm preaching and I'm talking about accepting Messiah and I'm looking here, but she's over there. And I know she's listening to me. And I said, you must receive the Lord. Speaking to her, but she's over there. And I knew she was. And I figured while I was preaching she was doing it. So after the service, I led a little prayer, and I knew she would do it then. So I saw her, she goes, no, I'm not ready. And then I left her, and my mother-in-law gets a hold of her. 2 minutes later, I hear she prayed to receive the Lord. I go back to her, I said, what happened? I thought you were going to pray with me. She goes, your mother-in-law said it didn't matter who I prayed with. She prayed to receive Messiah at that moment. And she said to me, she goes, well, I'll pray again with you. And I said, it's not necessary. You don't want to call God a liar. You ask Him to come in your life, He's in your life. Then she said these words to me. She says, well, can I now thank Him with you? Verse 10. And when they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. She thanked God for coming into her life. In verse 11, and they came into the house, and they saw the child with Miriam, that's her real name, Miriam his mother, and they fell down and they worshipped the Messiah. And they presented him with treasures, they presented him with gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. They presented him and worshipped the Messiah. In your outlines I put down here, D, we should believe in and worship the Messiah. I want to end. Went too long already. I want to end with a little story. What do we do when our search ends and we find a Messiah? When we find a Messiah, we need to believe in Him. We need to receive Him into our life. The Bible teaches us we need to worship Him. Jewish man back in the 1800s, about 1894. Jewish man, a rabbi by the name of Leopold Cohen. He started his search by reading the Jewish Talmud. And as he would read it, he got thinking about the Messiah from the Talmud. Then what this Jewish rabbi did, you say Jewish rabbi, just need to say rabbi. Anyway, what this rabbi did, he decided to read the book of Daniel. This rabbi, by the name of Leopold Cohen, started reading Daniel. Now, the Talmud says you're not allowed to read Daniel, because if you read Daniel, your bones will blow up. You're not allowed to read Daniel, because that speaks about the Messiah. This rabbi figured, if the guy who wrote it said your bones will blow up, his probably didn't blow up, so I'm going to read Daniel. So, he read Daniel, and he started searching for the Messiah. And his search led him to America, this rabbi. And through circumstances, and leading, and guiding him, one day he's walking down the street, and sees a church with Hebrew letters. And he went in and they started talking to him. And this man was led. He got alone and he started realizing Jesus, Yeshua, is the Messiah. And this rabbi sat there and says, what can I do? What about my people? What about my wife back in Hungary? What will I do? My people have been persecuted for thousands of years. But on one hand, he said, the Bible seems to tell me, Yeshua.